And to you.
Thank you very much. How's it looking to you so far? What's the political weather looking like?
Well, the big issue is the grooming gangs. That seems to be the one that's started the new year there. The stories are just beyond horrendous that are coming out now, both about what these gangs of men did to the children, but also the way they were, almost explicitly supported by the authorities. The police arresting the girls for, one case where a girl was found naked with seven men, a 13 or 14-year-old girl, drunk, surrounded by seven of the grooming gang. That in itself doesn't really capture the horrendous behavior. And the police arrested her and let the others go. There's an example going around at the moment of where a 13-year-old girl did go to the police and complain about what was happening. And the police completely dismissed it and then allowed members of the grooming gang to collect her from the police station and take her off to be raped again. It's a real, combination of the worst of what's going on with woke culture at the moment. So on the
People won't
one hand, these
remember the Rochdale trials. I think the beginning of what was it, tail end of 23, if I remember rightly. So what we're saying is that the grim saga of this is still being played out in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I mean, grooming gangs are still going on. They've been, in effect, encouraged by the institutional response that puts the, and Simon Danchuk, who was the MP for Rochdale, saying that senior Labour officials had told him not to mention the ethnicity of the gangs because, I mean, you really do get the impression on the one hand that Labour is really quite afraid of the new Hamas caucus, in effect Hamas caucus in Parliament led by Jeremy Corbyn, which is has already taken five seats from Labour at the last election. So on the one hand, Labour feels if it does actually stand up for the white population against these specific Pakistani Muslim gangs, then they'll lose a lot of votes, they'll lose a lot of seats. They may well do with this. There's real fear that since, I don't know this is particularly a part of the political point, I just think the areas where this activity was going on tend to be Labour areas. So there's great fear as to what this will show of people who at that point were Labour council leaders, like in Telford, but are now members of Parliament. It's a bind for Labour, which has never really, for many years now, has never really liked the white working class, and it's never felt the white working class was very important, which is exploding. But if Labour doesn't respond to this growing tide of anger, then they will lose a lot of votes to reform. So it's a bit of a bind for Labour, which doesn't seem to be being driven by what's right. I mean, the fact that Jess Phillips has, who spent so long in opposition saying, "Oh, the Tories, they don't care for these girls." If any Tory tells you that they care about it, they don't. And now she's in a position to do something about it. She has refused a public inquiry into what was going on in Oldham when we desperately need to understand as much as we can how these gangs managed to establish themselves. The Parliament heard that something, anything up to about a quarter of a million girls have been raped and trafficked over recent years. That's a staggering figure, a quarter of a million girls, if it's accurate. We desperately need to understand how this has happened. Well, firstly, I think the government needs to decide whether it thinks it's a bad thing or not. And then, if it does think it's a bad thing, then a public inquiry as to how we got to that stage where so many girls were being raped, with the full knowledge of councils and the police and the people at the top of the pile. The Tories don't come out of this with any honour at all. An awful lot of this came under their watch. But if you know, if powers that be do decide that the rights of white children, white girls, should come into the picture against the right, those who say all cultures are equal, it's in the culture of these things to view children as property, who can be dealt with in whatever way the man feels appropriate. We kind of need to take a stand on which of those two is the way that society is going to go forward. And obviously, I think the vast majority of people who aren't in positions of power would think that the industrial scale rape of children in this way is not something that should be tolerated, let alone encouraged.
It's a cultural shibboleth, really, isn't it? Many, many years ago, the early noughties, quite early in my social care career, worked with Category 1 young offenders. I won't go on a long digression, but one of the things that was found was that the way in which these horrendous activities were orchestrated was with a degree of substance misuse related complicity, but it became a sort of a cult of fear, a cult of shaming, and nobody will believe you, sort of malarkey. But the extent of this brought in people in positions of power. I remember tearfully reading a file where a social worker had been drawn into this, bizarrely, in the middle of Suffolk, an isolated area, and there were things going on in a farmhouse that were routinely. Well, almost beyond belief. So these things could mushroom. At the same time, a few years ago, I seem to remember a lone protester who I think was thought to be one of the staff and NATO fruitcakes stood up and said that the abuses were going on at a parliamentary level, which were never proven. I mean, Edward Heathley on Britain and various other figures were named, and then the man was dismissed as a fantasist. That this is very often the way in which these things are orchestrated. And I'm not saying that he wasn't. But this is such a fireball of an accusation, and yet, in a sense, somehow under the carpet routine in our culture since Victorian times, in a ghastly way, that I don't think it's ever really been properly dealt with. Is it time to go public on the psychological dynamics of these things, and also the fallibility of people in power, rather than simply making them tabloid fodder and dealing with the thing that way? My hunch is that Jess Phillips might have refused this inquiry because she was unconvinced that it would not be a whitewash.
I don't know. Well, she needs to explain it properly and explain why that wasn't her stance when she
It would
was in
be
opposition.
astonishingly inconsistent, wouldn't it, given her main thing, which is the rights of women and rights of young women.
Exactly. Yes, it's impossible to take seriously any claim that the Labour Party is takes women's rights seriously when these sorts of anomalies are floating right in front of people's. Right. I mean, that case with Heath and Britain and so on, and others who were blaming, I remember McAlpine, the head of the McAlpine organisation,
Yeah.
building company, was wrongly smeared.
So the
And
Tory big cheese, wasn't he? Yeah.
absolutely, we shouldn't be in a position that the word of a single person is taken as gospel. And at the time, the police said they had. They believed, they said right at the start, as soon as this guy came forward, they believed what he said, which was clearly malicious nonsense. And so I'm not saying that you just, take one person's word for something, but this is literally thousands, I suspect we will see coming forward, telling what was going on. And they had already come forward and made their reports to the police and been roundly dismissed. And there was a great wave, particularly in the Labour Party, of saying you mustn't tie this to a particular ethnicity. I mean, of course, it shouldn't be needing to be said, but I guess it does need to be said
Yeah, I don't think it
that
can be
there are.
now in the broader sense, but yeah,
Well,
sure.
yeah,
Yeah.
there are vast numbers of Muslims in the country who I would hope are exactly as horrified about this as anybody else in
Sure.
the community. That being said, there doesn't seem to have been any cases I'm aware of, or certainly many cases, of where it was whistleblowing within the Muslim community, the Pakistani Muslim community, that brought these things to light. And indeed, during the court cases, that community came out in full support of the perpetrators of these unimaginably, sick crimes. But many in our got a large Ahmadiyya Muslim community in my ward who are, absolutely splendid in their commitment to the community and helping people who are less well off than themselves. So it's, but calling them Asian gangs firstly is misleading. There aren't any Japanese in these gangs. There aren't any Chinese. There aren't any foreign Vietnamese or anything. It's a particular subculture that we have here, and that's a problem for us. And either that particular subculture needs to accept that the British culture is different from theirs, and if they live in Britain, then they adhere to the British legal system, the British culture. Or we need to start looking at when people have been convicted of these sorts of crimes, then some sort of automatic deportation. I can't see why we would possibly want to retain people who are so at odds with the very, very basics of our morality, which is to try and protect children. Those who don't sign up even to that, I do wonder why there is a group of people who are so keen to maintain their presence within our country. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, a year and a half ago, I'd never have dreamt that I'd be thinking about this, just thinking this way about things
Yeah.
like this. But the overwhelming weight of showing that there is now a real cultural position. You can take the position that many MPs, I think, Rosina Alun Khan, my MP in Tooting, who basically say it's racist to claim that any culture is superior to any other culture, which is a point of view. Alternatively, I would say if you don't say that a culture which rapes children, which wraps women up in now the Taliban are saying that women can't even stand by their own windows,
Indeed.
in case anybody
And the age of
spots them.
consent has been lowered again, I think, to something
Yeah,
ridiculous.
indeed, and now women are not allowed to train as midwives, and since it's not allowed for any man to give medical help to a woman, this is in effect, a rolling death sentence for countless women in Afghanistan, with the danger that Syria might go the same way. I'm afraid, if you don't believe that that's an inferior way of organizing and treating other human beings, then it's practically impossible to have a sensible discussion on where we're going. And
I
I do
remember,
think that these issues are going to grow in the course of the next year. The grooming gang issue. Funnily enough, I was just, while I've been swimming, I usually listen to podcasts when I'm swimming on my waterproof MP3.
Marvelous.
And I download current ones, but obviously over Christmas, the usual ones like that I listened to weren't on because festive things. So I went back and listened to a File on 4, which is a wonderful BBC Radio 4
I
series.
was previously
Went
taught
back
by
and
one of its reporters many, many years ago.
right, yes, yeah, and I listened to one from 2012 on the Rochdale prosecutions, which had happened there, and the same stories about how horrendously the girls were being treated by the police, about how only a handful of the perpetrators were actually prosecuted, how the girls and their parents now were having to see the people who had raped them wandering around perfectly free in Rochdale without any fear of being brought to book for their behaviours. Of a father who was arrested by the police for trying to rescue his daughter from one of the houses where she was being abused. And you wonder, has anything materially changed through the decade or so? Decade of, I'd say, the Conservatives are in no stronger position than Labour over this by any means. Nothing really seemed to change through the 10 or 12 years since then. We're still hearing exactly the same stories, not just of what's gone on in that decade, but what still seems to be happening today. And it's a bit like maybe that when the when the post office broke into public consciousness, even though it's been there for some time, I suspect this is the next one to do, the next issue to do that.
I remember back in my Category One training all those years ago. It's a pretty common trope now, but then it was quite revelatory to suggest that some sort of warped perspective, some warped personae, particularly when they're on the back foot, will treat or feeling inadequate in some way, will treat their sexuality as an exercise, as a patriarchal thing mainly, in power, literally, a projectile power rather than anything that is in any way complicit, benign. It's entirely a force majeure, and this kind of gets collectivized in a sort of pathetic way. But it's all these people feel that they've got in the last analysis. Now, I suppose that you could extend this to ways in which organizations think, and ways in which things were, as it were, as a body politic done to us in less enlightened times, perhaps still are. So often, the personal weaknesses of people who rise to great power are all too conspicuous, and sometimes, as with Trump, for example, and his cohort, they're in plain sight. It is somewhat par for the course. This idea, I suppose, of original sin, and you think of what happened to the Catholic Church, indeed the Church of England, this past year. It was a parallel process, really. We still haven't figured out how to deal with this, have we?
No, and I mean, clearly there have been horrendous things going on right the way through history. There was a general feeling that with the spread of Christian values, once Christianity and many of the other world religions, which grew out of the Christianity, I was thinking of Christianity moving away from a focus on Easter towards a focus on Christmas, that moving away from the focus on God as the judge and the jealous God and the punishing, but the punisher of sins, towards the God of the of new hope
It's just, I'm doing this for your own good, sort of thing. Yes.
and it's and most religion, most people I know who adhere to religions, including the Muslims in the Ahmadiyya community and other Muslim communities who I know personally, have they take their faith as a pressure to do good to people of all faiths. And I think the when I see the activities of the Ahmadiyya Mosque in East Putney and the churches in my ward, there's a Sikh temple just outside my ward. The synagogue in my ward, and all these
Old
communities.
friends of St. Barnabas, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they all go to each other's services. They have a local faith group, and the council has a local faith. The Wandsworth Council has a local faith council called Sacrate, where the religions come together, and the individuals, while continuing to worship in the way that they feel comfortable and appropriate, will nonetheless work together with other faiths in order so that everybody benefits. But unfortunately, radical Islamism, which is only one, sect within Islam, but radical Islamism seems so just seems so focused on making life as unpleasant as possible for people around them, as you say, in an exertion of power over other people, that a point comes where you can't accommodate that any further. You have to start saying no. This is not acceptable. We're not going to accept people covering their faces with masks and marching through London, throwing Nazi salutes and calling it peace marches. There comes a stage where we have to say that's so counter to our what I would regard as civilized values that we need to take action to prevent it happening because of the effect it's happening on so many of our other communities.
Let's hope that there will be good minds gathered around the table in coalition, as you mentioned, in the sort of sacred spirit to try and sort this out. But it is one hell of a unpleasant legacy with which to start contemplating a new year. By contrast, perhaps that of Jimmy Carter. In hindsight, how do you assess him? I noticed, amongst other things, he trained as a nuclear plant operator.
Yes, he wasn't a great friend of the nuclear industry while he was in power. But, and of course, the Three Mile Island accident happened during his tenure as president in the States. I mean, on the one hand, he was clearly sincere and patriotic and in it for the right motives, in a way that we used to take for granted from our politicians, but sadly can no longer do so. On the other hand, his Middle East policy was disastrous. He was a significant factor in the undermining the regime of the Shah of Iran that led to the 1979 Iranian Revolution and the creation of the Islamic State, which has been such a dreadful cancer on relations in the Middle East and indeed across the world. It seems that that regime is in a lot of trouble now. Women in Iran are beginning to openly take the veil off and to claim that they are equal to men, which is not something which has been showing there. The pictures are around now. Just what a wonderful, liberal place Iran was. The Shah was no saint by any means. We
Well,
shouldn't pretend that he
he was
was.
installed, wasn't he, by the CIA and others, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but he was, the revolution there, and of course it bounced terribly badly back on Carter because the American hostages who were taken in Tehran, and America ended up having to being completely humiliated. There was a botched raid that the American forces carried out that didn't rescue the hostages and ended up in many deaths. Carter ended up having to pay a fortune in ransom, and it was one of the many factors that led to Reagan winning the 1981 election in the States, the 1980 election in the States. So it was his. It's a very mixed. It's a mixed legacy.
All politically
On the one
resent
hand, I
badly,
think to
don't
play a
they?
decent, a decent man, but equivalently, someone whose legacy, I'm afraid, casts very long shadows over the Middle East.
What about his persona? I mean, he was immediately ridiculed. He was ridiculed the other day by Trump, I suppose, for being sort of, a hick, I guess, to paraphrase a little bit. The way in which somebody like that comes to power, one thinks over here perhaps of John Major as someone who's is preternaturally unassuming, shall we say. Do we need a bit more of that in our current political weather, particularly when a humble, as you were saying earlier on, quite a lot of humble pie needs to be eaten?
Well, it goes back. I think integrity starts from a real vision of where you're trying to go. And Major faced the, Thatcher was so clear in her analysis of what needed to be done, and her government adopted policies that were directed at that and were successful, I think, in addressing those. Now, of course, many people think the analysis was wrong from the start, and that the cost of the policies outweighed their benefits, and that's a perfectly legitimate political argument. But Thatcher was, it was interesting how Tony Benn, who it's difficult to think of of anyone more politically opposed to Thatcher, but actually wrote a rather warm obituary when she passed away, saying that, have I got this right way around? But certainly at various points, yes, I think it was an obituary, saying that she was clear. Ben always used to say that there's two types of politicians. There were the signposts and the weather vanes, and the signposts would be firmly planted in the ground, pointing the direction that you should go to get to where they thought we were going. Whereas the weather vanes were the ones that just sort of blew round depending on which direction the wind was blowing. And it was clear that on a personal level, he had rather more respect for Thatcher than he did for Blair. Although politically they were entirely and absolutely opposed. Major was a very decent man, but you got the impression, whereas Thatcher, she had a set of values that then that made her a conservative, and all of her approach was imbued by that. With Major, you got more of a feeling like it was built up from the bottom, but after he did a series of things, he discovered that it led him to be a conservative. A very decent man, and actually, after the financial crash of 92, he and Ken Clark as Chancellor were a very, very effective government. It was too late by then, but then and by 97, the economy was in a very strong state for Gordon Brown and Tony Blair to take over. Blair was a showman. I think a rather good prime minister, probably, certainly a long honeymoon period. Gordon Brown, in a sense, then back to the rather doer lacking in charisma, which is not a that's charisma is not essential in a politician. There are many like Attlee who had an enormous effect on
That
British life
toothpaste
without.
smile he was urged to adopt in the very last period was sort of his tombstone politically, wasn't it? Didn't work at all.
There was the Churchill line about, an empty taxi pulled up and Mr. Attlee got out. It was, but Attlee clearly, an enormous influence over what we're doing without ever being a great great charisma. But then we saw, I mean, Cameron was okay, I think, and the coalition government was actually quite effective, I think.
PR
But
man.
since then, it's been and Theresa May was a daughter of the manse and very serious minded. But then, really, since Boris Johnson and then Truss and then Sunak, who I have a lot of sympathy for, I think history will treat Sunak more kindly than the present is doing. But I guess it really goes back to Johnson that we had someone who was all show and clearly, enormous personal failings, as was shown by the Downing Street parties and like and a like Trump, a very distant relationship to the truth. And now Starmer, who has got seems to have no detectable, underlying philosophy of where we're going,
Is that
and has done things that, cutting winter fuel allowance to pensioners and a string of policies, putting up VAT on businesses when the manifesto specifically said they wouldn't. And just, policy after policy, not supporting the WASPI women, which I think was probably the right policy, but this was after in opposition, they said that they would
Yeah.
compensate women who the increased retirement age left them in a very difficult
Financially
situation.
bereft, yeah.
And these are very, and what, not what you would expect from a Labour government, even though they stand as being, some of
I
them
suppose
reasonable in their own right.
they might argue that there are equivalent policies that would compensate some of these losses, and they're trying to deal with this mythical or all too real 22 billion pound or whatever it currently is black hole left by the previous administration, COVID and whatnot. There's a report, sorry I didn't have chance to circulate this, by the Institute for Government, to which Brown and Major contributed, talking about failings. I think it's called Power with Purpose, just quietly released about a month or two ago, suggesting that number 10, it gets a lot of detail but doesn't effectively have all that much power relative to the Treasury. I'm just wondering what you made of that as a concept. And one of the proposals, I think, includes having a department for the Prime Minister that and also a sort of very close-knit department for the civil service that would actually make sure it was across things rather than have various conclusions of accruing randomly, then having to be sort of rationalized before the public.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's generally been thought that the creative tension between 10 and 11 Downing Street is an important factor in running a reasonable government. That you have number 10, which has the vision and the direction and number 11 saying, yeah, but we haven't got the money to do that.
Mm.
And, or we haven't got the money to do that yet. Or if you want the money to do that, we're going to have to do this as well. And so and Treasury orthodoxy, as it became known, got a very bad name. Liz Truss, in effect, in her brief tenure a couple of years ago, was very critical of Treasury orthodoxy and felt that she could totally ignore the advice of people who've been around for a long time
Crispin
without.
Odey of Kwasi Kwarteng fame is suing some big institution. I mean, as if he didn't have enough money. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
Yeah, I mean, it's yeah, the Treasury is there to make sure that the finances of the country work. Number 10 is there for different reasons. Number 10 is there to make sure that our whole social culture, survives and works, and we're a
Do you think
country of
it knows
people
that
ourselves.
well? Because they talk
Sorry?
about sometimes this talk of political revolutions and righting long lost wrongs, as we alluded to earlier on. How you do that?
Well, I mean, and ultimately, you do it through legislation, and that's the way the thing works. And having that alternative power base, whispering in the ear, "Remember, you are mortal," in effect, and talking prime ministers down from some of their things is there. It was the failure during the Liz Truss interlude. Showed what happens if you don't have a treasury that has the impetus to say to number 10, you're going to get yourself an awful lot of trouble if you do
Don't
this.
speak truth to power.
And so the and usually the tension grows between the Chancellor and the Prime Minister over time. The relationship between Geoffrey Howe and Margaret Thatcher. Howe was Margaret Thatcher's first Chancellor, enormously influential in the development of Thatcherism in that first Thatcher term
She did
from
also
70.
say, sorry, a scatological sidebar, everybody needs a willy. But anyway,
Well, that was Willie Whitelaw, which was
Yes, indeed,
given part there. But Howe and Thatcher famously fell out, and that was clear in the in Howe's resignation speech that in effect ended the Thatcher premiership in 1990. Blair and Brown's relationship was famously fraught throughout Thatcher, Theresa May and Philip Hammond, that there was a lot of tension there and back calling. The one exception, actually, I think, was George Osborne and David Cameron, who seemed to remain very, very close throughout their respective tenures of those posts, which was over 6 years. But very often the Chancellor and the Prime Minister end up falling out because they do have these different jobs to do, and it's, I
This is
guess, a
the
matter.
thing that, as you say, sorry to interrupt you, they are interpersonally, they can be quite close. That could be a very good thing. But then the whole thing gets bureaucratized. You have literally next door neighbours interrupted by the necessary machinery of due process, which is often is having to operate extremely quickly, insofar as it ever can, while being, aware of the long game.
Yeah, I guess so. Whether you portray something as political football as or as a venue for sensible discussions coming from different viewpoints, I guess depends on your view of any particular issue. There should be tensions in government. If you get to groupthink, where everybody in government is only allowed to think a particular way about an issue, and you get into trouble if you think differently, then all experience shows you that before very long, you start getting tripped up because nobody's got a 100% view of what's going on, however good their political antennae. I guess Thatcher and Blair, who you would say were the two most extraordinary politicians of the post-war period, or certainly the post 60s period. Both of those, their political judgment let them down eventually. Thatcher over the poll tax, Blair over Iraq. They, all politicians who are in a strong position of power for a long time start to believe in their own infallibility, and you need people in government who say no, this is not the case, and you will get into trouble if you do this. And the Prime Minister, in turn, needs to listen to those voices and take them into account, not necessarily agree with them always, but at least recognise that there are different views out there, which their sense of political immortality might end up them becoming blind to.
Does that require, sort of, as it were, how can I put it, a kind of philosophical parity, a kind of sense of a collegiate sense here? I'm thinking, and again, I don't be intrusive here, going back a little bit, when you were going to be working with Rory Stewart, for example, it struck me then as a conceptualization that you would have been a very useful in an advisory capacity to the sort of person who knew fully the need, however much travel and wisdom accrued, for somebody who could actually have that sense of speaking Socratically and saying, let's think this through.
Well, it's nice you say that. I mean, I think Stewart himself is that sort of character. He, when he was preparing for mayor, wanted to go and stay with some people with different types of London lives so he could understand them better. Thing, I mean, his reputation, I suspect, will never recover from his black and white saying that Biden, then Harris, were definitely going to win the American election last year, and was so clear about it
Well, he's a
that there was
pundit
a
now,
real
isn't he?
message to follow through. But he's still, a very interesting commentator, and again, someone who was always clearly in it for the right reasons, was a very, compassionate and intelligent man who, his main motivation was making life better for people who weren't as well off as himself.
These people want. Yeah, sorry, you were saying.
Okay.
I was wondering where people like Stewart are going to go politically in the coming year, with, I suppose, the Lib Dems somewhat in resurgence, Labour doing what Labour does. It's had one or two sort of arrivees from the Tory party, some of them surprising, the likes of Louise Elphick. Whether the One Nation, which I know is, a territory for which you have great affection.
Well, we're, I think, in this coming year, likely to move further and further away from that sense of consensus. It's going to be, an interesting battle between the insurgent Muslim party and the very clear sectarian politics that it will bring on the one hand, and reform on the other hand. I think we're heading further into culture wars that have been pretty much raging for a decade.
The leadership of reform is surging, isn't it? And I find this surprising in terms of the usual political cycles. Is this bucking them?
I don't think normal political cycles are certainly not happening at the moment. Maybe they never will again. The fact that our two major parties got little over 50% of the votes in the general election last year. When, if you go back to the 50s, Labour and Tory between them were polling well over 90% of the vote. We've seen, even within First Past the Post, which is notoriously inimical to new smaller parties trying to establish themselves, we've seen a parliament which elected four Greens, which elected five Reform candidates, as well as the nationalist parties in Wales and Scotland, the Lib Dems. Their highest ever number of seats, 72 seats, and the two major parties, Labour only picking up just over a third of the vote, so just around one in five adults voted for Labour, and despite the fact they won two-thirds of the seats, that's a very shallow majority, even though it's rather wide at the moment. Normal politics is, as we see it, so if your election comes up and you choose Labour or Tory, growing numbers of our fellow countrymen are not thinking that sort of way at all. And you can see the next election having credible fights involving Labour, Tory, Lib Dem, Scots Nationalists, Welsh Nationalists, Greens, the new Islamist Party, Reform, of course. You can see, perhaps 12 or 13 parties having representation in Parliament. And as we're seeing in Germany at the moment with the surge of the right wing
AFD.
or
Yeah.
AfD, that's the alternative for Deutschland for Germany. That makes governance very, very difficult because if the rest of the mainstream parties say we won't work with AfD, and AfD is picking up 30 or 40% of the seats, then you're forced to into a coalition of parties that have very, very little in common, except that they're not AfD. So you're forced into a disastrous coalition of the SPD, the Social Democrats in Germany, the Christian Democrats, are in effect the Conservatives, and the Greens, which has you're seeing Germany's industrial output collapsing on a pretty much a daily basis, and then losing their traditional position as the economic powerhouse of Europe because it's just being mismanaged politically. And that's because you've got, or to an extent, because you've got parties forced into coalition who just don't have anything like enough in common. They can make things work. And the coalition government in the UK, I say, to be fair, the two parties there did manage to create a manifesto or a body of policy that they could both agree on. And those 5 years of governance were, pretty good in terms of recent experience. But if it had to lever in two or three other parties in order to form a working majority, then that could have been very, very different, I think.
Interesting to hear you say that in the week that Nick Clegg resigns from Facebook slash Meta because a Republican is leaning. It's interesting that that is even a thing in a social media organization where Graham here, I'm sure you would echo that thought, is succeeding him. So it's the right time to move on. I wonder where I suppose David Miliband was also cast into the political wilderness and found a new home in international aid. There's that, but there's also where Starmer might head, and whether he is in effect going to have to be a weather vane and sort of form a coalition with the way in which, at the moment, the German public appears to be thinking in favour eventually of putting Farage in number 10, in order to perhaps forestall it or at least to moderate the effect.
Well, the left needs to. I think they probably have come to a position on this, and they need to decide which they're more afraid of. The
That's a very
growing.
useful word here, isn't it?
Yeah, and is it the splintering off of the Islamic vote, which has traditionally been very solidly Labour for many years, or is it the splintering off of the white working class vote, which has been was ultimately had the Labour Party was really
White
formed
van
as the
man, it was once called by Dame, now Dame Thornbury.
yeah and it became that sort of quite low level scornful of the white working class, whereas of course the Labour Party emerged as the voice of the white working class in the early 20th century, the political voice of the trade union movement, which was doing so much at that time to improve the lot of workers. So Labour, without a set of values of its own at the moment, it seems to me, is kind of going to have to decide whether it says no, okay, we are going to support British values, we are going to take a stance against gang rape of children, we are going to protect women's sports and women's spaces. Or they're going to go further down the culture wars and the woke route, which is, and I thought Kamala Harris's experience in the States, where the it seems the single most successful Trump election advert was the one that says, Kamala Harris is there for they them, we're here for you. Which apparently 2% of people who saw that advertisement changed their voting intentions from Democrat to Republican. And a single ad that has a 2% effect on the electorates is just absolutely unheard of.
It could swing it, couldn't it? Really, yeah, when it was that tight. Yeah.
And yeah, indeed, yes, given that Trump won by 3 percentage points over Harris in the popular vote, it was we forget that it really was quite a close election, although the way the Electoral College works, it was very solidly for Trump. These sorts of issues where people just think, why is it that we're not, that schools, cancel Christmas because they're afraid of offending one or two children who, wouldn't be offended anyway, because kids of all backgrounds seem to me to enjoy Christmas.
Indeed.
Yeah, why is it? Why
Why
is
can't
that
they?
someone? Why is it people who, tweet something unfortunate and they shouldn't have done, but end up with 3 years in prison, while strings of other, offences, particularly paedophile offences, are getting suspended sentences.
This is where
It's
this idea of the institution of government, sorry to catch idea that the Prime Minister gets loads of detail to which he has to be, they suggest, or a Prime Minister of the modern age, to which he has to react, not in a spin doctory way, but with some sort of instant, as it were, salve, moral salve, to say, well, this is deeply wrong, we'll do something about it at some stage. Or, but at the same time, the backstory, the way in which this has accrued, which you were so eloquent in the research and explication of, is not apparent in amidst all the noise and fury.
Yeah, it's difficult to, when things get to a certain stage, and things we I think are very close to reaching society, then reversing becomes very, very difficult indeed. But you need to do this. The Simon Danchuk, who was a Labour MP for many years in Rochdale, is now coming out and giving evidence of how he met a brick wall from the community there, saying, no, you mustn't talk about this because there's danger of a bit of civil unrest if it becomes known that the perpetrators were from a particular section of society. We've got the rumours floating around at the moment, and you've got to be very careful because they are only rumours, as to what the Prime Minister knew about the perpetrator of the Southport atrocities when those three children were murdered in Southport. And how, the view that came out was, this is not to do nothing to do with Islam. It was
That was about the riots in the summer.
a car, someone born in Cardiff who had done all of this. Well, yeah, this individual was born in Cardiff, but they also were found with a great deal of Islamic terrorist propaganda on them. And if it has been, and people are just feeling they're being lied to about a lot of this. And social unrest is far more likely if you get large numbers of people thinking that the authorities are deliberately lying to them than if society said, right, there is a particular problem in this area here, and we'll work as best we can with the sensible leaders of that community to see if we can get to a point where the behaviour gets stamped out. But we're not denying that it's there. We're looking for a way forward. The British tend not to, indulge in civil unrest in those circumstances. It's when there is a sense that, our political leaders are, gaslighting us for whatever reason, because they don't trust us to know the truth. I think at that point you're walking on very, very thin ice indeed.
Yes, indeed. That could have certainly have been that fork in the road back in the summertime. Malisova, thank you very much for an eloquent review and some cautious augurs for the new year. See you next time. Have a good
Okay,
weekend.
cheers. Bye.
Thanks.